And welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. My name is Magla Pillay and I have here in the studio with me today Sister Denise, who's been practicing Raj Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for several decades. As you can see from the background, which is in the form of a Greek temple, the setting is reflective of the manner in which today's talk is going to take place. And Sister Denise and I have decided that the form of this talk is going to be one of Socratic dialogue, which is simply a manner of putting questions to an individual in order to elicit the truth from them. It's a form of getting to the bottom of things that in our daily lives you and I don't necessarily think about. The subject that we're going to take up today is of particular interest to us because we're really looking at, as the title says, the world's value system, their morality, their ethics and virtues. We will look at what the difference is between the four, and we will look at how this impacts on our behavior and the way we treat ourselves and the way we treat others. Sister Denise has shared in the past that most people want to do the right thing, but paradoxically they do not do so. In other words, they act against their conscience. And in this program and on all others to follow, we will be looking at why this is the case. Sister Denise, very, very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Today's topic is I think the best way to put it is the behavior is not the person. Now, that will be a shock to most people because we do not say so-and-so murdered somebody. We say he is a murderer. We do not say so-and-so stole a piece of bread. We say he is a thief. And most people across the globe equate conduct with the person. Do you see it differently?
I do see it differently. A person performs many different kinds of actions. When you say this person is a thief, you brand the person that the only thing that that person does at all is to steal. They may have stolen something once, but the branding of that person as a thief means that he will never be able to ever do anything other than steal. And so he is looked at that way in people's minds. So basically, by branding a person in that way, you destroy their lives. And people are quite happy to do that because they feel, you know, moral superiority if they compare themselves favorably against this person who did something that they probably did but didn't get caught. So it's really something that I think is not at all good for people to cultivate this thing. But I think that is so rampant in our culture, and it's very much part of the sacred literature, you see. And I think that we need to challenge that.
Okay, Sister Denise. If somebody stole something once, if somebody took the life of another human being once, does he not deserve to be called a thief? Does he not deserve to be called a murderer, a robber, a blackguard? Does he not deserve the title based on his conduct?
It's not really a question of whether he deserves it or not. It's more a question of the habit that is very much widespread of branding people. Somebody will say, I am a lawyer, I am a doctor, I am a king, I am the president, therefore I'm a good person, you must respect me. He is a thief, therefore he's a bad person, you're free to treat him however you want. That is the problem, you see, because a person who is in a position or occupying an office that carries respect and regard with it may well also steal, murder, lie, etc., etc. And in many cases, because of their high office, they are immune. And so I think that's a whole lot worse than somebody who is branded as a thief for stealing a piece of bread because he wants to feed his family, because the people in power deprived him of his job, you see. So the whole justification of moralistic behavior, punitive behavior, I would really call into question, because I see that it doesn't really have a valid foundation. And this is why I think it's much better if you say this is a pure, peaceful, loveful, blissful soul who forgot themselves, lost their power, no doubt experienced all sorts of traumas, and did a bad thing because of being weak, you see. But you don't brand a person by doing that, you see. What you're saying is anybody, whether they're in a high or low position, is capable of doing an action which is against their best interests, which is contrary to their conscience. Whenever I ask gatherings of people or people individually, do you always follow the voice of your conscience? I've never found anybody who said yes, high or low, you see. And so I think it's very important to discourage people from branding themselves as something marvelous and wonderful and fantastic, and then branding somebody else as something awful, because that is not really what humanity is about. It's much more subtle, much more complex, and we need to be in touch with the subtleties and the delicateness of the human situation. This is what I feel.
Sister Denise, a very well-known judge in the country from which I emerge, once said that the best judge of future behavior is past behavior. Okay, which I'm of the view is quite a valid premise. And the reason one would come up with something like that is to say that if somebody committed a crime once, his propensity to cause society harm in the same manner again in future is higher than somebody who hasn't. And so society needs to protect themselves accordingly. We don't give people those negative titles for fun. We give them for a reason.
Sometimes, sometimes not. Sometimes people do that exactly for fun. You know, it happens. False accusation is a very interesting subject, because once a person is falsely accused, everybody looks at them in terms of that accusation. So whether they are accused of something they did and said to be a thief or a murderer or whatnot, and if somebody accuses them falsely, it has exactly the same effect. It ruins their life to the same degree. And they just have to... Well, there was a very interesting case in Sweden that was analyzed in detail, where some people were obliged to confess under duress, and then they were tormented to such an extent that they lost contact with what really happened in a particular event. And this shows how much you can disturb a person by subjecting them to interrogation processes which amount to torture, and actually cause a person to come into a state of mental illness, you see. And because it's done by the so-called law enforcement people, that makes it all right, you see. And always in the question of governance, there's always this question of if a person is in a position of power and they do something, is it automatically right? Well, no. If a person is in a minority or in a position of weakness or whatever, and they may be badly treated to a point where they no longer have contact with their human dignity, and then they will do bad things because of the bad treatment that they have had. And you have to factor all of this into the subject and come to terms with the reality that it is not a straight black and white thing as people think.
Okay, so
take for example theft.
Yes.
It has been found that any girl who is raped under the age of 13 pretty much always will steal. That is a strange and psychological reaction to rape when you are under the age of 13, and it's so widespread that psychologists have said, you know, there's a connection with this. It doesn't mean the person is a thief. It means that the person was raped at that age. And so if you find someone who is stealing, especially someone who doesn't need to steal, they have what they need, but they're doing it, it's an indicator of a violation of that nature, sexual violation in a very young age. You see? Now, most people, they have no clue about this. It is not well publicized. They just look at the thing that was done and they say, okay, we're going to punish this person. So you're punishing them for being a victim in the first place. And very often in our society, you blame the victim.
Okay, so here's the thing. According to the law of karma, we all have to pay for our sins, do we not? So if somebody conducts themselves in a manner that takes something away from society, as opposed to adding something to society, they have to pay for it.
Well,
and
you see, you have to...
That negative conduct stains their pattern. I'd like to know why you're smiling when you answer my question. So, I find what you're saying difficult to digest. I respect what you're saying because it's very kind and very humane. However, I'm struggling to buy it, like a lot of people listening to this show, simply because I see society as a holistic entity. Now, every human being is either adding something to it or extracting something from it. Now, stealing, committing a crime, sexually violating a child is extracting something from it, whereas somebody adds something to it by being, for example, choosing a profession as a paramedic, which is internationally a very low-paid job but highly beneficial to every part of society across the world.
Well, that tells you something very important right there, that
yes.
The people who are adding the maximum are rewarded the minimum. What's that?
Okay, that is a subject for another day. Coming back to my original question. So if somebody is conducting themselves in a way that most people find morally reprehensible, then is it not the law that the person who behaves badly be seen as a person who behaves badly, so much so that society, when encountering such a person in future, will be able to protect themselves from this person?
You're looking at particular incidents without seeing what led up to it.
Does it matter?
It does.
Why?
Because there are many things that never come to light which need to be taken into consideration. Many things which are shown in a biased way which cause people to think about that thing in a way that is different from how it really was. And if you look at things in that sort of black and white cardboard cutout way, then it causes people to make evaluations which are very kind of from the hip, you know, just without taking into consideration everything that has to be taken into consideration. So instead of being good judge, they become prejudiced. And they operate out of prejudice, which subtracts from society, it doesn't add. So in Raja Yoga, we're taught about seeing the three aspects of time. That is, every situation that becomes visible in any present moment has a whole series of things that led up to that. And if you don't bear those in mind, you wouldn't understand what this is in all of its dimension. And you also wouldn't understand where it's going, you see. So it has been taught to us, you must look at everything in terms of the three aspects of time, otherwise you will make a judgment based on incomplete information, and therefore your judgment is likely to be wrong. So, in order to become more wise, more sensitive, more right, one has to look at the larger context in which things happen. Whereas the moralistic people will never look at that. They will just see something that if they can punish, if they can make somebody feel bad, by comparison, they make themselves feel good and can pretend to themselves, well, my sins are nothing in comparison with this other person's sins, you see. And then they permit themselves to compromise their behavior. And this is what leads to double standards, which is another subject we need to talk about. One law for me, another law for these other people.
Okay, so let's talk about the we spoke earlier about society and how they view somebody who does something wrong. Now let's look at the person who finds himself in jail or finds.
But it's also difficult to talk about society because society is made up of a huge number of different groups, all of whom think differently, feel differently, experience differently. So to make a generalization about society is unlikely to be true.
Okay. Let's look at the scenario where somebody has a history of committing crime, stealing, found himself in the position of being an abandoned child and has resorted to stealing most of his life in order to survive.
Definitely.
And now he is now branded as a criminal and a thief. How can he come back from that if one day he wakes up and realizes that I have a chance at making a life for myself? I'm now 19 years old and I want to become someone.
19 years old? What happens in cases like that? By the time the person is 19 years old, he's probably in a gang. And the lifespan of a gang member is 21. So he has two years to go.
Okay.
And he has also been criminalized. He has already been branded. The likelihood of waking up and having a realization that, oh, I think I'm going to change my life, that's not realistic.
Okay.
It's really not realistic. For a person to actually come out of this kind of trauma requires a different context than the context in which one brands people, criminalizes people, punishes people, and so on. It is very difficult for a single human being by themselves up against the force of social attitudes, prevailing social attitudes, institutionalized systems which mitigate against that person ever coming out of it. You see, the society is set up in a particular way. A small number of people have all the things, all the power, all the opportunities, education, etc., and so forth. A large number of people don't have access to that. And the small number of people who do make sure it stays that way because they have the power to do that. So this is the situation in a general way in most of the world. So to criminalize people, to make out people to be weak and bad and so on, is a way of maintaining the status quo. And so that is a survival instinct on the part of the small number of people who enjoy the maximum of privileges. And it's just the reality of the world we live in. So then the question arises, in such a reality, how does a normal person, not even a criminal, you know, a normal person, how do you navigate yourself where you are somewhere in between those two extremes? You know, most people are not at either end. They're somewhere in the middle. You want to be a good person. You want to follow the voice of your conscience. But everywhere around you, you find yourself in situations that are bigger than yourself. So the main difficulty for a person is weakness. What meditation will do for that person is give you strength. Because a weak person, in the face of all of this, homicidal or suicidal, ultimately. A weak person will get into depression, which is the suicidal direction, or they'll be reactive, which is the homicidal direction, you know. So I would say that because we are in very extreme, difficult, pressured situation, the most important thing to do is to strengthen the self and develop resilience in the face of all of this. That's what I would say.
Say more about that, Sister Denise. What do you mean, resilience?
Well, resilience means you have to be really very sure about yourself, that I am a good person regardless of what everybody says. You see, because when everybody says I'm a bad person, then I'm going to start thinking, well, you know, I thought I was good, but maybe I'm wrong, maybe they're right. You see, because there's thousands of people think I'm no good, and I'm the only person who thinks I'm good. You start to doubt in yourself, you see, because you don't have any reinforcement, positive reinforcement, plenty negative reinforcement. So a spiritual environment gives a person a lot of positive reinforcement. And when there is a lot of positive reinforcement, that helps a person to feel that, yeah, maybe I can, you know, turn around my life.
Okay. So you're saying that a person is not their behavior. This is the person and there's the behavior. And yet you face the consequences of your behavior. How does that work?
The consequences of your behavior, you make a mistake, you will pay for that mistake. But if you say you are a mistake, you'll never stop paying. There's no end, you see. So that puts a person into a position where they might as well die. They have nothing to lose. They have no reason to do different behavior because they've been condemned, you know. It's over, you see. If you say you're a very good person, you did these bad things, we understand why you did these bad things, but those reasons are not justifiable. They're understandable. But, you know, here's some other options. You could do this, you could do this, you could do this. That is going to help. The other is not going to do anything except destroy the person. And one of the big problems we have in the world today is overpopulation. It's a very big problem. There's 7-8 billion people. The earth cannot sustain all of these people within the system, which is so inequitable. And so the way that many people are seeing is that, well, you know, the problem is there's too many people. That means life is cheap. Life is not valued. So people who are in power, especially they have military power, they're hungry for political power, whatever it is, They can easily misuse, abuse, and damage people, and they feel justified. Well, what's another 10, 15, 20, 30, 100, 2,000, 5,000 more people, more or less? What's the difference?
Mm. You know? Mm. Okay, unfortunately, Sister Denise, that is the last answer that we hear from you today, because we've run out of time. Thank you so much for your exceptionally enlightening talk. I think most of us fall into the category where we equate somebody with their behavior. And what Sister Denise has shown us today is that we should re-look at that stance of ours. And what I like most about your talk is that it's so humane, and your this attitude that you shared, is wisdom that you shared, is so much kinder than we normally function. I will invite you to take what Sister Dini said and sit with these thoughts and see whether you can apply it into your life, because I think there's room for improvement in all our lives, and what Sister Denise just shared is universally applicable. You are not your mistakes. I think that is the main message that I took from today's talk. I hope this has been of interest to you, and if you'd liked what you heard today, please feel free to join us on a subsequent occasion. Thank you for your time, and goodbye.